Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. We're recording a little bit later than usual on a Monday because Sydney has spent the entire day speaking and writing about Luis Rubiales, who has finally resigned as president of the Spanish Football Federation. Tarde y mal, Sid, as they say in Spanish. He's gone late and he's gone in a bad way as well. Talk us through, obviously you don't need to give us what the entirety of the article that you've written today, but talk us through your general feelings on the Luis Rubiales end and how we got to this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, the tarde y mal kind of fits with it, the idea of being late and doing it badly, because he was a clogging left-back who would go into tackles like that as well. And that's sort of how he runs his presidency. We have said lots of times before, and, you know, it feels a little bit redundant to go back over everything that's happened over the last two or three weeks. But I think in terms of framing it around him, and this is what I've been doing today in a way, is kind of the almost the who is he piece. How does this kind of conclude his presidency? And I think, as we've said lots of times, and we said this before this particular story happened, and we even said at the start of this story before getting into the, if you like, the deeper elements of it, that we've always, I think, had a feeling of him as, even in those moments where we thought he's not that bad, that there was a clumsiness about him, that there was a kind of aggressiveness about him, there was a bravado about him that was problematic. And it's curious to think, and this is one of the things that I was kind of thinking about today, that after everything that had happened surrounding the women's team, and obviously that's not the only thing that's happened in his presidency, and today I've been writing about his presidency as a whole, not just what's happened with Jenny Hermoso, with Jorge Vilda, and with the 15 players that pulled out a year ago, and all of those things, but the whole presidency. It's curious, really, to think that when the final whistle went on the World Cup final, he was in a stronger position as he has ever been in. You know, all of these many, many moments when he could have been pushed.
Well, that's probably what led to this act of enormous hubris, isn't
it? Quite possibly. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely right. I think that's true. And hold on a moment while I make a note of this, just to squeeze this into the article, because that specific point I didn't make, although I hinted at it, because I was talking about this idea of the elation kind of exposed him, the elation kind of put him back in the firing line, if you like, because when they win the World Cup final, when that final whistle goes, he's in a stronger position as I think he'd ever been in. There'd been lots of attempts to push him out. He's talked a lot over the last couple of weeks about having enemies. And actually, he's right. He does have enemies. He talks in this current statement about what he describes as poderes fácticos, which means not the official power, but if you like, the kind of the hidden power, the real power. And that some of those poderes fácticos are lined up against him. And again, he's basically right, but of course what he's done is create the conditions in which it was, in the end, it was easy for them to come and get him. But he'd survived so many of these things, and after that final he's in a really strong position, even with the argument about the women's team, because of course at that point, on the face of it, and in terms of a public facing image of him, he could say, look, we resisted calls to make changes in terms of Jorge Vilda, and we've just won the World Cup, and this vindicates us. Instead, what happens is, in that moment of elation, and in that moment in which he exposes himself, he goes and behaves in a way that kind of forces us to, and enables us to, redraw the portrait of him, redraw our impression of him, and which vindicates a lot of the points that would be made by those women's players, by those, that women's national team, by those players And actually, he kind of exposes himself at precisely the point when he should have been in a good position. He kind of ruins it all for himself, by the way. I mean, because obviously there's a far broader question about what this all means for the Federation and for women's football.
There is. And we've been obviously speaking about this in depth for the last few weeks. We will continue to talk about the fallout from this. What's the next step, Sid? Where do we go from here? Who's going to be president? How long are they going to be president for? Are there going to be elections?
Well, so this is the situation. The situation essentially is you have now there will be elections. The question now is about the timing of them. And the question now is about whether they become interim elections to bring in an interim president or whether they become permanent ones and how that process is managed. Now, one of the things that's important in this and one of the reasons why he's finally gone now is because of the way the rules are set up in terms of having a president in place in time for the Olympics of all sporting institutions in Spain. And so there was pressure on them for this to happen sooner. And essentially the reason why Rubiales has finally gone, and he makes this point in his statement, and I think it's the point where he's telling the most truth in all of these things that he said, is that essentially, had he not gone, the damage to Spain's Olympic bid, which of course is his legacy, it's his project. World Cup bid, would have been, I think, irreversible. He's essentially been told, and pardon my French, listen, if you don't go now, you really screwed this. You know, this thing is absolutely ruined.
Okay. Well, he has gone, and we'll see whether or not it is completely ruined or not. And we'll see whether or not... Are the women's players going to play? Are the team going to come back now?
Honestly, I don't know the answer to that. My guess is that they will.
Like, at the moment...
They haven't
At the
yet.
Moment, if there was a squad that had to be picked today or tonight... None of them are available. Yeah. None of them have made themselves available for selection.
And bear in mind, we're not that far off that because I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's Friday that squad has to be announced.
Yes.
And that squad has to be announced because that is for two games that will decide whether or not they go to the Olympics. In other words, we could be in a situation, if they weren't to go, we would be in a situation in which the World Cup winners would not be at the next Olympics. Now, is the Olympics the be-all and end-all for football? No, but it's significant and it matters. Now, I would guess that they will, if only because... If you're talking about demanding changes and some of the initial 15 players, well, three of them, more than three made themselves available by the way for the World Cup, but three of the 15 went to the World Cup. Some of the things that were demanded were put in place. Some of the improvements were put in place. If on top of that, you have got a new coach who backed the players who spoke out this time, the 81 who did the Se Acabó statement, a female coach, and the president of the federation is gone, even if you don't have a huge amount of trust in the interim president of the federation, the changes you demand actually can't happen any quicker, if you see what I mean. Now, they could have happened quicker in terms of Rubiales because he could have gone 3 weeks ago, but the current body that's left in place didn't control that. In fact, there were parts, there were the territorial presidents of the, by which I mean the regional presidents of the federation, had tried to get Rubiales to go earlier. And there is an argument here, and I think it would be fair to make it, that it was FIFA that forced Rubiales rather than the Federation itself. But the Federation did try. The government did try. Spanish society did try. The players did try. I wonder if some of Rubiales' friends also tried, if some of his family also tried, albeit his mum went on a hunger strike on his behalf. And so there's a bit of me that looks at it and thinks that from the perspective of those players, and I can't presume to speak for them, but that looking at it, I would say from their point of view, if only as an act of good faith at this point in terms of saying, OK, we're going to trust that this will be moved on, quite a lot has already happened. Quite a lot has already moved. And this does feel, and we've talked about this before, like a point of no return, like this is a step towards something else, like the Federation can't go back now, if only because of the social pressure. The Federation has to be seen to be forcing those changes through, to be taking women's football seriously, to be funding it in the way that they want, to be giving them the degree of expertise in terms of additional coaching staff, in terms of nutritionists. All of these, some of these things, by the way, had already been done. And actually, Jorge Vilda said this in his departure statement. Now, I don't want to kind of imbue Vilda now with the status of the man who's telling the truth, because of course we know that there are a lot of people who a lot of those players were not happy with him. But what he said about, look at the number of coaching staff which had gone from, I think he said, four of us to 14, that the staff we took to the World Cup, which was different, that the chartering of flights was different, that some of those things that were done, to use Alexia Putellas's statement when she was talking about the things we're demanding, were essentially to allow us to be footballers all the time and nothing else and not worry about those other things. Some of those things have been done. And the removal of a manager that created disharmony, a manager that the players didn't trust in, a manager who the players saw as a symbol, if you like, of I guess nepotism is the word. I don't know if it's quite the right word, but, you know, someone who's in place because he's sort of owes his position to Rubiales. The removal of him and the removal of his boss and the fact that there's a social pressure now for the Federation to continue changing, I feel like surely puts them in a position where I would imagine, again, I don't want to speak for them, puts them in a position where they must now believe that, okay, we can go back, pending, obviously, this being followed through now.
All right. Let's move on and talk about the Spain national team, the men's Spain national team, who had a really quite important European qualifier against Georgia on Friday evening. And there was a huge amount of pressure on Luis de la Fuente after his applauding of Luis Rubiales, which left him very, very questioned. They'd also been beaten by Scotland in Euro qualifying to leave them in a not the best position in the group, despite winning the Nations League. Obviously, he was under pressure coming into this game. There was massive pressure for all sorts of reasons, and they won 7-1 against Georgia in the absolutely pouring rain in Tbilisi. But this was an extremely impressive performance from Spain. Genuinely, they were absolutely superb in the first half. And the real headline, I guess, being the score of the seventh goal, Lamine Yamal. Yes, Lamine Yamal, making his debut with the Spain national team, becoming the youngest player ever to play for Spain, becoming the youngest ever international scorer, certainly in the last 100-odd years or so in Europe. And a very impressive performance and goal from him as well. Some other things to pick out. The hat-trick from Alvaro Morata, really good performance, and a goal from Fabian Ruiz, who wasn't necessarily expected to start. Nico Williams coming on with Lamine Yamal in the second half and scoring a well-taken goal and generally looking very dangerous down the left-hand side. So overall, tremendously positive evening for Spain in a game that was billed, Sydney, really quite seriously as a potential banana skin.
Yeah, and I will admit publicly that we thought there was a good chance that Spain blew it. That there was a good chance that in this game, that given all the pressure, and I think the pressure, it's worth putting the pressure into context. So the Spain men's team read out a statement before when they got together. They read out a statement essentially around the Rubiales thing, denouncing his behaviour, saying they supported the women. But it was a slightly lukewarm statement. It wasn't kind of a really determined stand, if you like. It was a sense that we have to speak, we have to say something. Here's a statement. What came out over the next couple of days, and obviously it was I think probably expressed best or exposed best, if you like, by Danny Carvajal's comments on, I can't remember which radio station it was he was talking to now, in which he sort of said, that's right, in which he kind of said, you know, there's got to be the presumption of innocence, and I understood that point, but the way he said it was incredibly clumsy, I thought. And he sort of said, you know, Jenny's not going for a good time. I imagine Rubiales isn't either. And that kind of created a backlash. But what that did, I think, in terms of the Spanish national team's performance, is it underlined that actually that statement that the men's team put their names to was more difficult than it appeared. And that there was a difference of opinion internally about what they should say, that they were put in a position that actually was hard than it appeared. Because on the face of it, to be honest with you, I don't know about you, when I heard that statement, I thought, well, that's a bit lukewarm. And let's face it, it's kind of been bashed out to be able to say, right, leave us alone now and let us get on with it. And actually, I think what we saw with Carvajal and a couple of other comments that then came out afterwards from other players was that this had been quite difficult. And that there had been some players who would have liked to have gone a lot further, and some players who frankly would have rather not done a statement at all. And that there was this degree of tension, and there was tension surrounding that. There was tension surrounding Luis de la Fuente, who was in that position, of course, where not only is he the other national team coach after Villa had been sacked, the national team coach that everybody knows owes his post to Rubiales, and under a different president, possibly he wouldn't have got this job. And not only that, of course, the context of him being one of the ones that applauded during Rubiales' speech at the Assembly. And so I think there was this kind of environment around this call-up that sort of said, you're in a hiding to nothing here. Now, this could go wrong. And then if you add to that the comedy element to it, and I don't mean to make light of everything else, but it sort of, it all fits together in a kind of comedy element that goes with it. The fact that they turned up and they forgot their bloody boots. You know, they arrive in Tbilisi and someone goes, ah, that big crate with all the players' boots in it. Someone goes back. They have to charter a flight to get the boots over there to them. They don't do the pre-game training session the night before, at least not properly. They do it in trainers. They don't kick a ball around. They do some stretching, a little bit running and stuff. And then they go, and as you say, they go and play really, really well. And that first half, do you know what most struck me in about the first half?
What's that?
The, what do you call it? Seña de identidad. I suppose the identifying factors, the identifying elements of, in particular, how high Spain played, how much they kind of kept Georgia inside pretty much their own area, not just their own half, how they were winning the ball back really, really quickly, how it felt coordinated. It felt like a collective effort. It's true that it took a while for them to get the goals. So they won the up with, what, 3 minutes to go to a half time, and then they get three more very, very quickly. But I thought they were, yeah, I agree with you. I thought they were very, very good indeed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
The world isn't wide enough. Get immersed in the expansive views of the 48-inch customizable panoramic display in the all-new 2024 Lincoln Nautilus Hybrid. Explore more at Lincoln.com. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
The last thing you want to hear when you need your auto insurance most is,
thank you for calling. Please listen to your list of 46 possible service options.
Which is why when you choose USAA auto insurance, you'll get great service that is easy and reliable. 24/7 online service for claims, access to roadside assistance, and more. All at the touch of a button. Start getting the service you deserve. Get a quote today. USAA. Ability to receive a quote depends on membership eligibility. Membership eligibility and product restrictions apply and are subject to change. USAA means United Services Automobile Association and its affiliates, San Antonio, Texas.
Very, very good indeed. Obviously, it's going to be a much tougher test when they play Cyprus at home tomorrow night in Granada. You know, it's a big one, a real test for Luis De La Fuente and his... Now, obviously, they've got to beat Cyprus. Cyprus lost every game, and Spain should win comfortably. They are 9 points behind Scotland, who have won 5 out of 5. Obviously, Spain have only played two. I've only played three. They've won two and they lost to Scotland. I'm not sure anyone saw Scotland being the runaway leaders in this group, and Scott McTominay being the top scorer in Euro qualifying. But anyway, Spain should be able to qualify, and they should be able to, if they win the next couple of games against Cyprus, and then is it against Norway again?
Yeah, and Norway's the big one, because of course Norway is the team that potentially could be a problem in terms of getting out the group, because obviously,
well, listen, if they win their next, it's Cyprus, Scotland, and then Norway. Obviously, Scotland and Norway in the next international break. Win those, they've got a really good chance of finishing top, I think. So yeah, it's not
what it's worth. I mean, I don't want to sort of dismiss the whole European qualifying process, but I'm about to dismiss the whole European qualifying process. Two teams get out of this group,
yes,
and even the third gets a chance in a playoff. There's a kind of a mix up of the third place finishes, isn't there? Yeah, I think right. So. Although I must confess, you've made me doubt now, but I'm pretty sure I was looking at this the other day.
Right.
And so if they don't get there, right, it's an almighty cock up, and it really shouldn't happen.
It really shouldn't happen. No. Okay. So let's see how Spain get on against Cyprus in Luis Rubiales' home province of Granada.
Yeah.
On
Tuesday.
Do you
think he'll go?
I do not. No, I think he will not and should not go. Just keep a low profile now, Luis. You know, head down.
It's not really his thing, is it?
After doing an interview with Piers Morgan. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you were asking me, I'm sorry to go back to it, but you were asking me sort of about what I was writing about today. It was that kind of idea of his personality in the end being what betrayed him, you know, and that's kind of it. And there is something sort of kind of ironic or fitting or appropriate about it ending this way with him doing an interview with Piers Morgan. It's sort of all,
yes.
The whole kind of bizarre, surreal thing has kind of wrapped up the right way, hasn't it?
Yes.
Well, the wrong way. Well, the right way, the wrong way. I don't know, but it's wrapped up in a way that feels sort of weirdly appropriate.
Weirdly appropriate, absolutely. Let's move on and talk about the first managerial casualty of the season in La Liga. This news broke last week, or on Tuesday, that Villarreal had sacked Quique Setién. We spoke a little bit about it over on patreon.com/TSFP for our patrons, who get lots of extra content for only around €4 a month. I wholeheartedly suggest you come and join us and become a patron. But we did discuss this a little bit. What we didn't discuss was who's taken over from Quique Setién, and that is Pacheta, the former manager of Valladolid and Elche, got promoted to La Liga with both of those two sides. So he's got plenty of pedigree in achieving impressive things with Spanish football. He's never been in charge of a side that have got top four aspirations, and he's never taken charge of a European game. So it's quite a challenge for Pacheta, and quite an interesting appointment for Villarreal, who were reportedly trying to secure the services of Raúl González, the Real Madrid legendary striker, currently manager of Real Madrid Castilla, their B team. The club, Real Madrid themselves, reportedly giving him the green light to move, but he decided to stay in the Spanish capital for whatever reason, one of them potentially being that there might be a vacancy in the Bernabeu hot seat sooner rather than later, and maybe he thinks he's well placed for that. Anyway, we'll talk about Pacheta in just a second, Sydney. We just want to get your thoughts on Quique Setién's tenure at Villarreal. Like I said, we touched upon it for patrons, but here on the Monday pod, it's worth reflecting on what was a rather up and down 31 game in charge for Quique Setién. Never really had the consistency. Never really felt like he'd won the dressing room entirely over either.
No, and it's really difficult to kind of offer a short judgment on his time, except to say it was strange. Because as we mentioned this, and then we mentioned the fact that we mentioned it, so apologies for the third mention of the same thing, but I think it's a nice way of framing it. But we were asked about this in the Q&A podcast a week ago. In fact, the day it happened.
Yes.
So it was prescient, the question about, you know, is he close to being sacked? And we sort of said, well, I think the answer was, if not just yet, which obviously we were proven wrong on, but we're sort of right. And then we said, but it feels like 3 or 4 bad games and he will be, but then 3 or 4 good games and we'll forget all about the pressure again. And he's sort of been like that all the way through his time, that there'd be this little run that was bad and you think, there's no way he survives this. Then there'd be a run that was good and you think, okay, he's all right. And then there would be a kind of a doubt creep in again. I mean, you know, it's only what is it, a week, 2 weeks since they played really, really well against, my mind's gone blank.
Barcelona,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I was trying to remember if it was Barcelona or Real Madrid, and for some reason I couldn't dredge into my mind which of those two it was. And they played really well against Real Madrid last year. In fact, beat Real Madrid 3-2 at the Bernabeu under Quique Setién. And after that game, you kind of felt like that game was Setién and Villarreal in a nutshell, and they were brilliant for about an hour and then sort of contrived to collapse a little bit and to be caught out. And once Barcelona had got level again, you sort of knew that they weren't going to win. And you're right, I think the sense that it just didn't quite work with the dressing room, that if the support had come from the president on behalf of the manager, that maybe it would have been resolved in a different direction. In other words, with, you know, the support to kind of remove certain players, but instead it worked this way around, which tends to be the way, partly if only because of numbers. You know, you're talking about one manager against, not necessarily against 25 players, but you've got a lot of players to change and only one person to change if you change the manager. A president that maybe isn't entirely convinced either, and a coach who's so wedded to a particular idea that any kind of deviation from that idea becomes problematic, if you see what I mean. And I think in the end, basically, it just kind of wasn't quite right. But I never really thought it was that bad either. I never really thought it was wrong. It just wasn't quite right.
I don't know if you've ever seen Quique Setién's Instagram account.
I haven't, actually. I don't have Instagram. So, unfortunately, no, I haven't.
You're still able to go on it even if you don't.
Yeah,
have
I know, script. I know. And every now and again I do, but then I realise that to actually go for it properly, I've got then got to sign up and I never get around to it.
It's been a little bit neglected, I think it's fair to say. Although he did post an open letter to the Villarreal fans explaining a little bit why he'd left. That was his fifth post on his Instagram account ever. The first in 3.5 years. And his Instagram biography, the bio says, El mejor camino para llegar a la victoria es hacer bien las cosas. Mm-hmm. The best way to achieve a victory is to do things the right way. Nothing else. So that just gives you a small idea into his mindset.
Yeah.
He's very clear. He's got this way of doing things, and it's the right way of doing things. And ultimately, if you're allowed to buy into his methodology, it will bring success. He also, in this open letter, made reference to something that he'd previously said, and he said, siempre dije que para hacer las cosas que te tienes, para hacer lo que quieres, te tienes que comprar un club. Yeah. Y este no es mí. To do what you want to do, you have to buy a club, and this is not my club. Making allusions to the fact that he was not allowed to do exactly what he wanted to. Wouldn't be the first manager with those grievances. To be fair to Quique Setién, I think two of the most important players to him last season were sold this summer in Samu Chukwueze, who had absolutely become a really, really fundamental player for him, and Nicholas Jackson as well, who ended the season in such extraordinary form. Two players who had developed under Quique Setién, who had massively improved under Quique Setién, and who clearly understood what was required of them. They left. So I guess those are mitigating circumstances. Yeah. And then we had the absolutely appalling pre-season that they had with some really catastrophic results and 3 points from a possible 12 at the start of this season. So Quique Setién has left, and the new man in charge is someone who I think we're all rooting for in Pacheta, simply because he's so earnest, Sid. He's so earnest, he's so honest, he wears his heart on his sleeve, he's expressive, he's emotional. He's someone that it's very difficult not to like and not to warm to.
I think he's great. I really like him, yeah. I'd like to point out here that you described him as a former Elche manager, and I can't remember, you mentioned some other teams as well. I will point out that he's also a former Real Oviedo manager.
Yeah, okay, a long time ago.
I was actually hoping that he might go back to Real Oviedo one day. But anyway, I don't raise that just for the...
Don't wish that on him. I thought you said you liked him.
Yeah, I don't raise that, by the way, just for the sake of being gratuitous. Although, obviously, the bit of gratuitous bias is always a good thing. I actually genuinely raise that because, obviously, I know a lot of people from Oviedo who were there when he was there, and they could not speak more highly of him. You know, for all those things that you were talking about, and, you know, this is not the public persona. This is them talking about him as the person that they worked with every day, as the person that they dealt with. And absolutely everything you say, they would confirm. That he's genuine, that he's honest, that he's human, that he cares, that there's a sense of perspective, but at the same time, an awareness that you can't have a sense of perspective in that, you know, football has to be the be-all and end-all. But actually, one of the best ways of dealing with football is to try and remove some of that pressure, to try and smooth some of those rough edges. I think it probably is fair to say that there are one or two there might be one or two doubts about this level for Villarreal, as you say. But then I was thinking, as you were talking about, I was thinking, this is what we said about Mendilibar, and it turned out very nicely.
Yes.
And that maybe given better resources, he will be an even better manager. Logic suggests he would be, although some managers obviously succeed better in certain scenarios. I think one of the things that is worth pointing out, remember that the end came for him at Valladolid after conceding 6 at the Bernabeu. And partly, I don't want to overplay this, and I'm conscious that there's a risk of overplaying this. So please kind of, if you like, soften what I'm about to say on my behalf. Part of that was a desire to play good football, was a desire to go and attack teams, was a desire occasionally to try and make things happen. And the reason I say I don't want to overplay this is because I watched plenty of Valladolid games that were pretty dull as well. I'm not going to claim they were always wonderful to watch. But there was, I think, a willingness to try and play. Which, of course, when results go against you and you're a small club, tends to rebound against you. Because people tend to say, look at you, you're naive, you can't play like this and all the rest of it. Again, yes. I think calling him naive would be overplaying. I think he was more nuanced than that. But I'd be very, very interested to see him at a club with really good footballers. To see him in an environment in which that connection with the dressing room, particularly if as we believe is the case. That's part of the problem with Kike Setien. Maybe that gives him actually a better chance that he goes into a dressing room, if you like, that kind of wants to like the manager because it wasn't sure about the last one.
So maybe
the timing is good as well. I would very much like him to do well because Villarreal is a club that I think most of us feel is quite a likeable club with some very likeable players. But also because he comes across Pacheta as a manager who's done things the hard way, who hasn't been kind of, if you like, given media backing, although actually it is true that over the last couple of years, because of his personality, the media has tended to like him and has tended to express that and has tended to celebrate some of the things he said. For example, the time when he told all of his players, and forgive me because I can't remember who it was at Valladolid, yes, you definitely should miss these weekend's games because your wife's about to give birth. You definitely should be at the birth. It is your son. It is the most important thing. And actually, that could have been used as a stick to beat him with, but the exact opposite happened. I'd really quite like him to do well.
First game for him in charge is on Sunday, and he couldn't have handpicked a better game. They're at home to Almeria. Almeria are the team with the worst away record in La Liga last season. Only one win in their last 20 away games. So let's see if Villarreal get off to a winning start under Pacheta. Before we go, we should mention, obviously, the big storyline from the weekend was the Asturian derby in the Segunda División, where I think on our bonus podcast last week for the patrons, I suggested to you it's going to be 0-0, Sid, and you said no, these Oviedo have got a really good record in this game recently, and it duly turned out to be 0-0.
Only one shot on target in the entire game, and that was Sporting's, not Oviedo. Oviedo are the team with the fewest shots on target, and maybe even the fewest shots full stop in the second division the whole of the season so far. It's not as bad as it might be because there have been three draws, but it doesn't look good, to be perfectly honest with you. It really doesn't look good.
Bottom of the table. Let's see if Oviedo can move their way up. Before we go, this is a look at what's coming up in La Liga when it returns this weekend. On Friday, you've got Rayo Vallecano against Alaves. I'll be heading to the magnificent Estadio de Vallecas. Will you, Sydney?
I certainly will.
Well, I'll see you there, my friend. Then on Saturday, we've got Athletic Club against Cadiz, Valencia against Atletico Madrid, Celta against Mallorca, and Barcelona against Betis is usually a good game. And then on Sunday, I assume you'll be heading to Getafe for the visit of Osasuna?
Well, I think so, although the Pacheta news has made me waver and wonder if maybe I should actually go down to the East Coast instead.
Maybe you should go to Villarreal against Almeria, Sevilla against Las Palmas. Haven't you got to be back for Real Madrid against Real Sociedad, Sydney?
Well, I could be back for it and go, but I don't think I'm in an obligation to be at it from a work point of view. I suppose this is a question for our listeners. Getafe against Osasuna and Real Madrid against Real Sociedad, or head to the East Coast for Villarreal and Pacheta?
Let us know, or tweet us, or if you're on the Discord for the patrons, tell us on the Discord, or just let us know what Sydney should do. Your decision won't be binding, but it will be taken into consideration. And we've also got Sevilla against Las Palmas on Sunday as well, and then on Monday it's Granada against Girona. That's it for this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. Thanks very much for listening. If you'd like to ask us a question, please do so. We'll answer it on tomorrow's Q&A pod. We've got a bonus pod coming up as well. Patrons got the first episode of Rincón Cultural last week, which is our discussion about life in Spain as well. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, come and join us. patreon.com/TSFP. It's around €4 a month. And if you really don't want to do that, it's okay. We will not hold it against you. What we will do is do another podcast for you next Monday. Adios.
Cheerio.